KSN and KCSN HD1 Northridge, Los Angeles, KSBR and KSBR HD1 Mission Viejo, a service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College, member-supported public radio, streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.
Hey, I'm Carmel Holt, and welcome to She Rose Radio, a space that was created to turn up the volume of women's voices and gender expansive folks in song and conversation. We're here not only to amplify, but multiply those voices that you may not even be aware you're missing, but are still not heard in equal numbers on the airwaves and in music. So we get together each week for an hour of songs and interviews featuring the trailblazers and the new visionaries across genres, generations, and identities, hosted, produced, and powered by women and queer folks. To quote Gloria Steinem, revolutions come from combining what exists into what has never existed before. This radio revolution starts now.
to my favorite show. Day two, hold my hand and pull me close. Next to me, kiss my cheek, cast my days. Day three, take me to a deep river, steal a kiss when I'm lost in the mist.
Will you still be there for me once I'm yours to obtain? Once my fruits are for taking and you flow through my veins. Do you still think I'm beautiful when my tears fall like rain? My love is so bountiful.
For a man who's true to me.
Not get bound by his poisonous chains. For a man who can follow his heart and stand up in my holy terrain.
I am blue when the moon hits my skin right. Hot pink when you open up my sweet, sweet. Pull you in and your life can begin. Cause it's early days.
Will you still be there for me? Now I'm yours to obtain. Now my fruits are for taking. And your fingers are stained. Do you still think I'm beautiful when you light me in flames? My love is so beautiful.
You poison forever, my lady. Oh, throw loads of God on you just to fall asleep. Pray for my sins, make me stronger while I'm weak. We die together, the prophecy complete. Yeah, we can hide, we touch the sky until we deceased. Yeah, and if you pray for me, I know you play for keeps. Yeah, calling my name, calling my name. Taking the feeling of this is not in the way.
Let me see you go bad. Let me see you clean back. Let me see you go bad. Let me see you clean back. Yeah.
It's Friday and I'm ready to swing. Pick up my girls and hit the party scene tonight. Oh, it's alright. Mm-hmm. So get up and let this funky mellow get you in the mood. Cause you know.
Check it out. see, show your personality, be who you wanna be. Tell me.
So can you feel that heat moving me on you? Hey, I wanna keep this party moving on all night. Keep on moving,
don't stop moving,
don't stop moving. Now let me see you go.
Well, last week featured a lot of new music. This week, we're going to get into some nostalgia. It's a big Shiro's birthday week, and especially Tuesday, January 16th, Aaliyah would have been 45. This year marks the 30th anniversary of her debut, Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, and that was her very first single, Back and Forth, a top five hit on the Billboard Hot 100 and a number one R&B song when she was just 14 years old. We also heard from FKA Twigs, who was also born on January 16th. And celebrates her 36th this year. We heard Holy Terrain. Welcome to Shiro's Radio, my friends. I'm your host, Carmel Holt. It is so great to see you as always. And together, we'll turn up the volume of women's voices in song and conversation for the next hour. This week, our featured guest is Marika Hackman, celebrating the release of her brand new album, Big Sigh. So stay with me for that. That's coming up in the second part of the show. Right now, getting into this one from Eartha Kitt, born January 17th, 1927.
C'est si bon de partir n'importe où, bras dessus, bras dessous, en chantant des chansons. C'est si bon de se dire des mots doux, de petits rien dis-tu, mais qui ont dit en langue, en voyant notre mine ravie. Les passants dans la rue nous envient. C'est si bon de guetter dans ses yeux une esprit merveilleux qui donnait la si bon, ces petites sensations, ça vaut mieux que million. C'est tellement, tellement bon.
C'est bon,
voilà, c'est bon. Les passants dans la rue, bras dessus, bras dessus, en chantant des chansons. Quel esprit merveilleux. C'est bon. Je cherche un millionnaire avec des grands Cadillac cars, mink coats, des bijoux jusqu'au cou, tu sais. C'est bon. Ces petites sensations. Peut-être quelqu'un avec un petit yacht, non? Oh, c'est bon. C'est bon, c'est bon. Vous savez bien que j'attendre quelqu'un qui pourrait m'apporter beaucoup de loot. Ce soir, demain, la semaine prochaine, n'importe quand. C'est bon. Si bon. Il sera très crazy, non? Voilà, c'est
this feeling, just can't get out of this mood. Last night your lips were too appealing, and the thrill should have been all gone by today. In the usual way, but it's only your arms I'm out of. Can't get out of this dream. What a fool to dream of you. 'Twasn't part of my scheme to sigh and tell you that I love you, but I'm saying it and I'm playing it dumb. Can't get out of this mood. Heartbreak, here I come. Can't get out of this mood. Can't get over this feeling, just can't get out of this mood. Last night your lips were too appealing, and the thrill should have been all gone by today. In the usual way, but it's only your arms I'm out of. Dream of you, 'twasn't part of my scheme to sigh and tell you that I love you, but I'm saying it and I'm playing it dumb. Can't get out of this mood. Heartbreak, here I
Grammy-winning newcomer Samara Joy, and from the Grammy-winning album Linger a While, that's Can't Get Out of This Mood on She Rose Radio. She won Best New Artist at the Grammys last year. This year, the Grammys coming up on February the 4th. Also heard from Eartha Kitt, born January 17th, 1927, part of our parade of birthday She Rose this week. I'm Carmel Holt, and next we'll switch gears to our featured interview of the week. It's with Marika Hackman, as we celebrate the release of her new album, Big Sigh. Stay with us.
Commercial radio is full of endless obnoxious ads. On public radio, your support replaces them. Subscribe today and keep the SoCal sound all about the music.
at thesocalsound.org. Discover music on 88.5 The SoCal Sound.
You're listening to She Rose, and I'm Carmel Holt. A sigh can mean so many things, from sadness, anxiety, depression, and frustration, to relief, comfort, pleasure, and love. Enter Big Sigh, an apt title for the brand new album from UK singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer Marika Hackman, her fifth full-length album and first of original material in 4 years. Written during a time when worry about breathing in close proximity to one another, let alone sighing, was at its peak, the pandemic saw Marika Hackman return home to be with her family, which brought on both feelings of pastoral childhood nostalgia and reflections on how it stood in stark contrast to her adulthood. In today's conversation, you'll hear how Marika Hackman broke out of a creative dry spell to write and record this incredible collection of songs over 2.5 years, embodying a whole new level of confidence that saw her playing nearly everything you hear on the record other than the gorgeously arranged strings and brass, as well as finally taking the reins as a producer, and how incredibly important, yet still rare, visibility in that role is as a queer woman. I am thrilled to welcome Marika Hackman as this week's Shiro in the Spotlight. Marika Hackman, welcome to Shiro's. I'm so psyched to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm very, very happy to be here as well.
Congratulations on Big Sigh, your fifth full-length album and your fourth full-length album of originals. Talk to us a little bit about the genesis of this album.
Well, I was kind of writing it over the course of a few years. It was a hard one to write, and not because of subject matter or anything like that. I think it was just, obviously, the world was pretty crazy. I mean, it still is, but a few years ago for different reasons. And it was kind of like the well of inspiration had just run dry. And I'd taken some time off to like finally have a bit of a break, because you don't really get that when you've been doing this for so long. And in hindsight, that was a big mistake in terms of creative flow. So from the writing side, it was really difficult. And then I was going into the studio with songs also sort of half written, and I was doing lyrics kind of in my lunch breaks and stuff like that, which isn't ever how I've worked before. I normally have everything kind of tied up in a little package before I go in. So that was like another challenge. And then there was some changes to production halfway through, and it was just a real journey. It was like a quest, you know, that big slog for the Holy Grail. But actually, I think it's one of my favorites, if not my favorite now. So I'm very happy that it was difficult, because I think every artist has to have that one that's just a bit tougher than the rest.
Totally. And it's like, you just turned 30, right, in the past few years.
Yeah.
And this is what it's supposed to be when you age. All of these different sides of yourself hopefully eventually start to come together.
Yeah, you have a bit more of a hold on yourself, like not a full hold. I don't think that ever happens, but definitely, like, even from like a sonic point of view, you know, I've been doing this as a career for like 12 years, but I've been writing music for longer than that. And the more you do something, the deeper an understanding you have of your own processes and how that works. And to be challenged at this point in my career by my own processes was kind of refreshing, but then also to know that my grasp on myself and what's kind of inside is a bit stronger. I think the combination of those two things meant that these maybe slightly deeper, more confident sentiments coming through, but with a bit more playfulness when it came to the production.
And speaking of the production, this is also a big moment for you, where you've finally taken production credit. Talk to us a little bit about that moment for you and what that felt like in process.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it still feels quite kind of scary to even have that said out loud, because it feels immediately like, oh, how do I talk about this? Do I deserve this? And that kind of stuff. And then it's like, no, that's the reason it's taken so long. Like, looking back from the first things I was making in the studio, I had a hand in the production even then. And production is such a wide span, everything that entails. And a lot of the time, if someone's just sitting behind the computer or behind the desk, they get called the producer. But actually coming up with ideas, arrangements and all that kind of stuff is such a huge part of that. And I've always had a big hand in that. But I think I just always felt quite happy to sit back. Just it felt easier, like I could take a back seat in terms of, you know, labeling it. And actually, when I did the covers album, which I just recorded at home, that felt like the really big step forward, because it was just like something I'd done completely solo. So I knew it was like, okay, well, this definitely was me. But then coming back into making other records, I just felt a lot more confident to be like, oh, well, actually, yes, I am worthy of this, and I did do that.
It really bears repeating that there are so few women and so few queer women that are in the production chair and behind the boards and mixing and engineering. And it's so tremendously important to be visible in that way. I can't underscore that enough. And, you know, we've been having a lot of conversations about that on this show. Like, I mean, we'll do this at the very end, but I do a thing at the end called the Shiro's Magic Wand, where I'm like, okay, imagine a world where you get to change whatever you want. I'll tell you, like, so many women that come on this show say, can we please get more women and queer women and queer folks in the production seat?
Yeah.
Studios. Oh, gotcha. Yeah. The studio is such a sensitive space.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's always that thing of, if you see yourself in a role, it's so much easier to inhabit that role and to feel confident inhabiting that role as you get older and you learn more. It's also, I would say, a really big one for the live sector as well.
Yes.
It's across both, and they're both very like sensitive and important in different ways. But obviously being on the road as a woman and finding myself aged, you know, 19, 20, just surrounded by sort of like 10 or 11 men for 5 weeks is a very interesting thing to throw yourself into. Or yes, being in a really creative space, which is getting very deep and very personal. But I've been very lucky with the men that I've worked with, and particularly Charlie Andrew, who I made all my first records, and he's got co-production on a few of these tracks for Big Sai. But it isn't necessarily the same as like seeing yourself sat in the driving seat, or, you know, an incarnation of yourself. So yeah, it's very, very important.
Why don't we get to a track? I know the first song that broke the dry spell for you was Hanging. And I don't know whether that's a good place to start today.
You're right. With Hanging, that's the watershed moment in terms of the process behind the record and the writing. Everything kind of followed that. It's a classic, sad, romantic song. It's kind of dealing with those relationships that you find yourself in. And it's just gotten to that plateau. And it's not a happy place for anyone to be in. And it's mean. You feel sort of suppressed. You're feeling squashed. And the big relief of coming out the other side of that. And there's no like ill will or ill feeling. If you listen to the lyrics, even as kind of heavy as they are, you know, it's like, I know you're not that cruel. You're not that person. It's that, yeah, you were a part of me. I'm so relieved it hurts. Like, I'm glad I cared. I'm glad this happened. But also, you know, it can get pretty heavy.
I'm going home to intubate, 'cause every time we talk, I suffocate. Remember when he said I'm a disease, and how he'd like to kill me in your dreams. It's a hard brown stone, like an embryo. It will never be a part of me worth finding.
That's Hanging, and it's halfway through this incredible new album by Marika Hackman called Big Sai. It's her fifth full-length studio effort, and she's our guest today on Shiro's, and I'm Carmel Holt. What's that line in this song that just crushes me? Hold on a second. I'm going to pull it up. My heart won't grow with your fingers down my throat. It's a hard brown stone like an embryo. Dude.
Sorry.
Crushing. So good.
Yeah, that's quite a gnarly lyric.
Yeah.
I do like that one. I think that's the thing with Hanging as well. Like, it's one of my favorites off the record. I mean, as a writer, it's your dream scenario to be able to push emotions as far as you can.
Yeah.
So I feel like I achieved that with Hanging, and I'm quite proud of the lyrics of that one. They're like my favorite ones on there. So yeah, it's my top guy.
I will say that I share that sentiment. Before we went into the song, we were talking about how you have finally embraced your role as producer and the myriad meanings of being a producer. The other thing that's really, I think, so remarkable about this album is all of the arrangements and the instrumentation and the dynamic range. I mean, from like the very beginning, the first notes that you hear our piano, and then there's an orchestral swell at the end of The Ground. Talk to us a little bit about your journey there, how that came about, your vision for the album sonically, and the role that piano took, especially as centerpiece here.
Well, okay, so I'll start with the piano really, because I mean, I actually learned the piano when I was really young. It was my first instrument that I learned, but I also really struggled with reading music. I felt impatient with it. I like learning by ear, but being sort of forced to learn scales and arpeggios and everything like that, I gave it up when I was like 13, 14, which is when I was playing all my other instruments, which were much more fun. I've always loved noodling around on it, but again, it's like a confidence thing. I've always felt like, oh, I'm not really good enough at the piano to do that. So with this record, knowing that I wanted to maybe have a more kind of cinematic edge to it, and I think piano's the most cinematic instrument there is, I was writing on guitar on some of the tracks to start off with, like Hanging. And then I was transposing those chords, which were in different tunings on the guitar as well. They're quite strange tunings. Transposing those chords onto the piano and then putting it in like that. It just changed the whole context of the song, which was great. So then the piano took a bit of a through line and I felt more confident. So that was really exciting to explore. And it's something that now going forward as well, I know is another string in the bow, as it were, to play with, which is really nice. Because yeah, it had been such a long time. But yeah, it was about cinematic landscapes, really, this record. I wanted to take really human experiences. And when I say that, I mean sort of really like universal, but they're common, they're domestic, they're normal, but they're still there, they're still heavy, and elevate that with the use of sort of like really beautiful organic sounds like strings and brass, piano, acoustic guitars. And then completely invert it by having these really harsh industrial sounds coming in that would add this really harsh dynamic to the whole thing and take you by surprise, slap you around the face a little bit. Because I feel like that's more akin to what life is really like as well. You can make everything feel romantic, but then something's going to come and clang in and surprise you and be hard and heavy and abrasive. So yeah, just trying to capture a complete human experience, I suppose.
And you did all the string arrangements as well.
Yes, I did.
Was that the first time that you've done that?
I've done like co-string stuff, but I've actually never really recorded strings in this way before, where we had an actual string ensemble and recorded them all live in a studio together playing. I've never really had the chance to do that. So it's just been like layering up with one person. So yeah, I mean, that was amazing to see 6-7 people playing these parts that you've written back. And not just on like a MIDI on a computer. It was one of my like top career moments, to be honest. Yeah, so I wrote the arrangements and then Sally Herbert, who was conducting and sort of sorting everything out, she then, I think, arranged them to the extent that it could be played by the right instruments rather than me just putting music onto paper, if that makes sense.
And such an old school way of recording.
Yeah. You're right, it's so iconic and it's how strings should be recorded. My biggest dream is to write a record that was for a whole orchestra, but it's very, 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 very expensive.
And also to be the record that you're finally taking production credit for. Yeah, you really like went big. It's like go big or go home.
Yeah, I think it's like when these opportunities present themselves, you've got to just jump in feet first. And I've always been that kind of a person. I don't ever say no to anything because I'm scared. Like I made that decision really early on. I'll say no to things if I don't agree with, or, you know, if it doesn't feel like it fits who I am, but I would never say no just because I was scared. And actually that's been a really great way of doing things because it means I haven't put myself down into a box and I've been able to cruise through and learn so much more than I would have if I hadn't taken risks, basically.
Yes, totally. And it just occurred to me that some of this, or maybe all of this process, happened during pandemic times.
Yeah, we were on the tail end of it all by the time I started recording. But yeah, the big impact of that was actually in the writing, because I was isolated and I didn't have any kind of stimulus going on apart from a bubbling level of stress.
Right.
I think I was also, I was in the countryside. So I think being somewhere more rural actually really informed that my life being split between sort of like London and the countryside at that point, that collision is very, very present on the record. And I think coming back into London, everything feeling a bit different and this constant sort of threat of having to kind of get back out again. It's all in there. It's hard when you're in the middle of it. You never know what's really going on. It's only when I reflect on these things and I talk to people like you where I suddenly go, oh, yes, that makes sense.
And also cool to hear about your beginnings with piano. And if I'm getting this piece of the story right, when you're talking about being in the countryside, you were actually at your parents' place. Was this where you grew up? Was this where you may have had those early piano lessons?
Well, it's not the same house I grew up in, but it's the same piano.
Yes,
from
there you go.
The house I grew up in. And also my grandma lives there as well, and she's a piano teacher. So she was instrumental in telling me and my brother to learn our scales. So yeah, there's definitely all these elements in there. I think as well, that feeling of escaping into my childhood set up in terms of like being surrounded by my family in that moment and then being kind of spat out into adulthood and responsibility again. Because like I went into the countryside back to my family and I decided I wasn't going to work, like I wasn't going to even try and write because it just all felt so kind of chaotic. And I just took it as an opportunity to have some downtime. And then it was like, I think it only further cemented my kind of fears and ideas about like adulthood and responsibility and like my London life and being, you know, a grown up, which is quite scary a lot of the time. And you kind of never quite get used to it. Being a musician, you know, you're on a hamster wheel, really. I started when I was 19, which is actually just when we'd moved into that house that my parents now live in. And it's, you're on a constant cycle, which I love because it's different every time and it's exciting. And it's why I love this job. But, you know, you spend time writing, which is your kind of lonely time. And then you're in the studio, breaking down the walls, getting creative, getting deep. And then you're out there playing it to the world and touring. It's just repeat, 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 which is a really nice trinity of experiences to have. But I realized I hadn't actually got off that train for 10 years. And actually, I mean, I hadn't even really been on a holiday. I think I'd had like one holiday with some friends, you know, so I kind of was able to really settle back into just being me. But I got pretty itchy pretty quickly. And that's when I made the covers record. Because I kind of was like, maybe I'm not going to dig deep right now. Doesn't feel right at this moment. And I feel like I won't be able to do it. But what I can do is take a bunch of other people's songs and I can kind of use that as my basis and just try some production chops and have a good time. And that was actually just such a good way of being able to feel busy, but like in a really relaxed, enjoyable way. So that was a kind of a bit of a lifesaver actually during that time.
Let's play another song from this album and thinking about the string arrangements and the ways that you stretched in the studio. Why don't you pick a track for us using that frame?
Ooh. Well, I think it has to be The Ground because that's the complete embodiment as a track of everything I've just been talking about. Like it's the doorway. Although this feels more like coming up over the brow of a hill and looking down at the rest of what the record's going to be. And I think it's like foreshadowing everything you're going to hear across the rest of it and opening up the world. And I had never really written a track like this. Like I'm such a song focused writer. I care so much about the quality of a song that it was actually really liberating to kind of play around with the idea of an instrumental and not feel that pressure to have to put melody and words to it and just let it be how it is.
Opens up the new Marika Hackman album, Big Sigh, her fifth full-length album and first album of original material in 4 years. It's called The Ground. Just such an incredible invitation into this album. Like you just immediately kind of go, oh, you know, like it like really did. It kind of like just took my breath away in that first moment.
Great.
So mission accomplished.
Yes, thank you.
So I wanted to spend a little bit of time, if you don't mind, talking about Shiro's related stuff.
Yeah.
The most annoying question ever being, what's it like being a woman in music? I put that in all the air quotes. What's it like being a queer woman in music? Air quotes. But that is what we're here to explore.
Yeah.
And obviously, the answers to that question, there's so many overlaps, and then there's different experiences based on who we are as people, unique people.
Yeah.
So in broad strokes, what's your journey been like?
It's been a really interesting one because obviously I started a fair while ago now, 10 years, maybe even 11 now. God, it is 11. That doesn't feel like a super long time ago, but it also feels like it was really, really, really different, especially to be a lesbian. Like I didn't tell my manager when we started working together that I had a girlfriend and I've been with her for like 2 years because I just felt, I don't know, like scared. And I think I was really scared that it would define me too much. Like that would be it. And that's all that would then be talked about. And we wouldn't be focusing kind of on the music and it would just be like, oh, there she is, a little lesbian kind of thing. So it's like crazy to me now just to think about that. Or like I had an interview on the radio for the BBC when I was just starting out and it was on Valentine's Day and the DJ, she asked me who my ideal Valentine's Day date would be. And I hadn't even like thought that any kind of question like that would be asked. So I kind of just froze and then said that it would be my dog, Margot. Cause I was like, I just didn't want to say, oh, my girlfriend probably. And I kind of was even running through like list of men that I thought were maybe quite attractive in my head to say. And I look back on that now and it's just crazy to me. I mean, I guess I was young as well, and I was like pretty fresh out of the closet. So that has its own set of challenges. But also, I wasn't seeing it around me a lot, you know? It wasn't like I grew up listening to loads of queer women making music. It was pretty slim pickings. So yeah, that was the beginning. And then my whole first record is about queer longing, obviously. Like when you look back at it, but I never like went into those themes. Honestly, when I was talking about that record, it's fun to be able to do that now, especially because I just feel so like looking back with such fondness of myself as like a 21-year-old. But then the turning point was when I did Boyfriend for the second record when that came out.
Tell me that you love me.
As it often happens, lyrics just kind of jump out at you and they just fell onto the page. And I decided, well, those are really good lyrics. I'm not going to get rid of those just for the sake of, I don't know, feeling a bit shy. And then, yeah, we put out Boyfriend and that whole record suddenly became like this real step into the ring with some confidence. And it felt like a lot of other people around the time, it was like this little shift forward. Like everyone just kind of like puffed out their chest a little bit.
Right.
It wasn't like this huge fanfare. But there was this kind of like underlying feeling of support. And I was hanging out with, you know, all of my friends who are musicians and they're all queer. And it was kind of realizing suddenly like, oh, I'm seeing them all around me now. So now I can be the one to be seen. And hopefully, I mean, a huge part of that as well is like, it's showing the younger generations that we're all here. If you see yourself in me, that to me feels like such a massive win for me and society, because it's like a constant step forward. And I think it's going to be over the next 30 years or so that we see true, proper change and equality and integration, because it's got to be those generations that have grown up being told this for their whole lives and not us who grew up bowing to sort of societal norms. It's like we're doing all of this work because that's when it's going to really actually count and feel properly settled, I think, is the thing. But yeah, in terms of the rest of my journey, I mean, it's been a very wonderful career. Like I said earlier, I feel very lucky. There's been challenges and there's been moments that I felt a little bit like a fish out of water, but actually generally, like, I've always just had very, very supportive people around me, and I've felt the industry kind of giving back on that as well, which is really lovely to feel slightly cradled in that way when you're doing something and it's so emotionally on a knife edge for you. So yeah, I feel like it's all salmon swimming upstream, but yeah, there's always still more work to be done.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I hope that you're right. I mean, I kind of have that feeling too about the next generation. Man, it is so fun to spend time with you and talk. I feel like I could talk to you all day.
Yeah.
I'm going to hand you the Shiro's magic wand, Marika Hackman. With this wand, you have the power to change anything in music for women, for queer folks. What would you change for us?
It's a big responsibility, this wand.
I know.
I think what I would wish would be that all of us queer folks could relay our life experiences within our art and our music, but sexuality not be the conversation around it, to just feel fully accepted and related to without it feeling still somewhat other. Also, you know, having much more representation for women and non-binary people in production.
Marika Hackman, thank you so much for being with us today. Congratulations on Big Psy. How should we go out today? What's our final track?
Oh, that's also feels like a big responsibility. Let's think. Well, actually, maybe it's fitting to have the final track as with the final track from the record, because it's a real winder downer and a downer.
It is one of my favorites, too, I have to say.
Oh, brilliant. OK, yeah. Well, then, yes, perfect. So, yeah, The Yellow Mile. It's another sad breakup song, but it's again, it's got that slight sense of relief to it. I think that's why, you know, the album's called Big Sight. It's all about kind of relief and release. And it's like the show me the bones that we buried outside. No homegrown. This is better. It's like that acceptance that things can be wrong. You can move on. And that's OK. That is life. So, yeah, The Yellow Mile.
Bite my head off. Spit me. Pick me up just to take me down. Looking up at the ceiling cracks. I'm a woman on my back. The gold was in your mouth. A heavy yellow smile. I wouldn't change the past. I was happy for a while. But I can't believe I loved you. Drunk when the lights went out. Time cannot wash my blood through. Give me any other wine. Any other wine.
With thanks once again to Marika Hackman. Thank you so much for being with us on Shiro's. What a pleasure.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I've had a great time.
Come back soon.
Yeah.
Many thanks to Marika Hackman for being with us. Her extraordinary new album, Big Sigh, is out now on Chrysalis Records. Today's conversation has been condensed and edited for broadcast. To hear the full interview, please subscribe and download the Shiro's podcast, available everywhere. Next, we close the hour with one more birthday salute to Susanna Hoffs of the Bangles and hear something new from Sarah Jarosz when Shiro's Radio continues.
Show me the bones still be buried outside. No homegrown, this is better.
Fiercely independent public radio. 88.5, the SoCal Sound.
It's Shiro's Radio, and I'm Carmel Holt. Sarah Jarosz returns in a couple of weeks with a new album called Polaroid Lovers. From it, this is Jealous Moon.
Unraveled, thought I knew the truth. Now I'm not so sure.
I drink my fill. I know you miss me. I still hear your voice in everything I do. Here we are under a heartbreak sky. Baby, I don't know why I flew away too soon. I
Wishing Susanna Hoffs of the Bengals a very happy 65th birthday on January 17th. Manic Monday on She Rose Radio, and also Jealous Moon from Polaroid Lovers. The new album by Sarah Jarosz is coming January 26th. That does it for this week's edition of She Rose Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in wherever you may be listening. Together, let's keep turning up the volume. She Rose Radio is produced by me and is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. Our original theme music is by Lucius. Download and subscribe to the She Rose podcast, featuring full versions of all of our She Rose interviews. That's distributed by Talkhouse and available everywhere. And don't forget, you can now call us on our new toll-free Shiro power line, 833-MY-SHIRO, to make a request or to leave us a message that we may use on the air. Find us and follow us at She Rose Radio on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Carmel Holt. Until I see you next week, remember that music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening.
88.5 FM, KCSN, and KCSN HD1 Northridge, Los Angeles. KSBR and KSBR HD1 Mission Viejo. A service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.
You just don't know why, but you know.